Hare, you ready?
I'm sorry, sir. Yes, I am.
Good morning, everyone. Today is Thursday, September 27th, 2018. It is now 9:09 a.m., and we are in the County Commissioner's Board Conference Room for the County Administrative Workshop this morning. President Commissioner Hare, Commissioner DeYoung, Commissioner Morgan is out on assignment. First thing on the agenda is item 1A, Community Development Letter Affirming the Grant Match. It's on page 2 of our doodad here. Julie's out of town, and I don't think we have a presentation from her.
No, it's something she's alluded to over time. Arthur could probably. She's listed you to write this letter affirming the board's commitment to the match element for this grant. The details of the grant are probably important, but from a standpoint of what she's asking for, the amount, we'll have the real nexus is if it's granted, and we say, you know, we are interested in pursuing this improvements to our emergency services operation. Really, this, I think, is going to dovetail with the consolidation of some offices and the moving of public works, the co-locating of emergency, maybe divesting ourselves of that facility in the industrial park, which I think would be advantageous. I would see that this match would probably be coming from the eventual sale of that facility. So you'd probably borrow the difference from the property reserve or general fund, support the building and consolidating of a new facility, and then paying that back when you sell the property on Tech Way.
You just put that into the contract when you borrow from the...
No, that's an internal thing. They don't really care where the money comes from.
Right.
For us, I do care. I don't think we want to just take $300,000 out of property reserve to make this happen, and then the sale of that property just goes into wherever. It should
right.
be...
Right. No, I mean, but you note that somewhere, that when that property is sold
internally. Yeah, we would make that...
Because
okay,
you know, long after you and I are gone, maybe when that happens or...
Yeah, it's
whatever,
listed in the
you know, that we want
property
to make sure
reserve
that it's
budget.
Written down somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm actually reviewing that right now with Arthur and Ryan just before I go, that all of those things like you're talking about that we've done over time are codified somewhere, and they are. They're
and
in
we
this.
Did that, just for the record.
Yeah, yeah.
And we
yeah.
did that
Arthur
with,
Boyer was doing it.
With the Dutch Brothers property at there at the industrial park. They had a matching component that needed to be met, and it took several years.
You mean the loan?
The loan, and they purchased the property, but if they could guarantee a minimum
jobs.
Number of jobs, yeah, then there would be a offset to the price. So that was over several years, but and we successfully tracked that, and that's been brought to resolution this past year.
We can build that into the process.
I just didn't know if we were reinventing the wheel here.
Is not new stuff. But for a backstory about how I would see that we would come up with that $300,000 or the match.
It's 310-610-601. Yeah. Total project is $1,030,000.
Yeah.
Roughly.
So I can see that as. We can say that we got that. If
yeah,
this
okay.
comes to fruition, that would be search and rescue's portion.
She just needs to have, I'm going to assume that a lot of times those grants, they say, we need to know that the money is there for your match or we're not going to do anything. So this is saying that the 310 would probably come out of property reserve and it is available for this grant.
Right.
Okay. Do you have any problem moving that?
No. I don't.
Forward? Okay.
Well, it's really,
So it's just writing a letter.
It's just authorizing finance and community development and search and rescue to work on this letter that I would delegate the chair to sign on behalf of the board to obligate us for these match grant, match funds. So,
okay. That sounds good. Moving on to item 1B is information technology branding contract with Slate Communications. With John McCafferty is joining us at the table.
Morning,
IT
commissioners.
Director.
The board directed me to start an RFP for to look at the concept of branding help consultants to take a look at our graphics, our taglines, our web content. So I sent a RFP invitation to five companies. Four of them were local. One was Slate Communications from Colorado. Two of the local companies declined to answer the RFP. So we had three responses. We formed a committee with representation from Parks, Economic Development, Commissioner Morgan, and the Sheriff's Office. We interviewed the three companies, and over a period of 6 weeks, we came to the conclusion that Slate Communications offered us the best package for what we were looking to do. So I'm asking the board how they would like to move forward. Do we want a presentation at a Wednesday meeting about what Slate is proposing? Do we want to bring it as forward as a business item? Does the board want to go forward with a contract? The cost not to exceed amount is $24,800.
And this breaks it down as to what that is for. So,
right.
I know over at the city when we embarked on a branding, trail. Boy, it was just, what do you need that for? What do you need that for? So a waste of money, so on and so forth. And it was pretty contentious. So maybe having a presentation in a weekly business session as to how we arrived here and what we're going to get for, this is quite a bit less money than the city paid for their branding, I can tell you that. So,
there's probably another phase to this proposal. This is designed for the website. Is it constructing it, or is it providing?
It provides samples of layout, colors.
Right. It's not doing it. It's giving
it's just
us
providing this strategy.
Of, okay, now this is what we want. Now we have to pay somebody to populate it, or
so we would have purpose. Something that we could do an RFP for a web company to say this is what we want.
Okay,
so that's this seems a good start. Phase
this
one.
Gives us the roadmap for where we
exactly.
want to go.
That's it, yeah.
Okay. I think one of the questions that's going to be asked is, well, why are you even doing this? We have a logo, and we have this, and we have that.
Because the resounding element for me is the lack of communication from what we do in this building to what translates out into the public. They don't know. And we started with really the state of the county address. We used to be substituting that for the thing that commissioners would occasionally do at Rotary. And that doesn't get out to a very broad audience. It's a very specific group of people. And this is just kind of an extension of better transparency, service, and communicating to the public everything that we do or try to do for them.
Well, I look at it as valuable because we're sending our message out, not somebody's interpretation of what we're doing here. It's actually coming from us, what we do here. And, one-on-one, rather than it going through, say, a letter to the editor or an editorial or an op-ed or whatever, and somebody putting their spin on it. So I think it's more valuable now than probably it was back in the Dennis Roller days or something of that sort. I think it's more important now that the message be clear and that the message be truthful and strong coming out of this building. And if this is what we need to do that, I'm entirely in favor of it.
Right now we have a
No, go ahead.
We have a nexus of hiring the web developer and the public information person. We're moving to a new website. This is the basic underpinnings of doing that right, having a cohesive idea of what we're doing, we're investing in.
Okay.
I see this as a working meeting, not a public input style thing. I would prefer if there is an opportunity for a whole group of people to be present, managers, everybody who's going to be taking part in this, not just the committee. I think the committee's got a good product, but kind of a showcase to everybody about, okay, so this is what we've done, this is what the board has selected, and here's what we're going to be doing to moving forward.
We have Monday's meeting. We could do it then.
Yeah.
I could do a PowerPoint and present it to the
great
department heads.
Yeah. And then maybe the Cliff Notes version to each of the board members. Commissioner DeYoung is going to be at that meeting on Monday.
Okay.
And at least that's what your schedule, my
schedule
says.
What my schedule is.
That's what my schedule says. so that would be great.
Okay.
That's the good way to do it. And sending out that invitation now to make sure that, you know, sometimes those are felt like optional things for people to attend. Everybody needs to be at that.
Invite the electeds too.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
That's what I would suggest.
Sounds good.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Part of this proposal, I'm not quite done.
Oh, sure.
Part of this proposal is an expectation of what the subsequent phases are going to be like and potential costs associated with those. Because a website is not sometimes cheap. We got ours off the shelf, and I think one of the justifications for finally spending some money on this is because we haven't in the last decade. So if you do the math about what the avoided cost was over 10 years, given $50,000 a year, we haven't spent that on any of these things that other municipalities do, even the smallest, or, you know, we really don't spend that much on this stuff. So I feel like this one, we can justify some startup costs because we haven't spent anything on this for the last, like, decade. We've been doing the best we can with the least cost alternative, and now we're leaning into it in a way that I think is reflective of what the public wants. They're looking for this information. And it dovetails so well with the codification of the code and the updated online access for building and safety, online permits and planning and building and safety, a whole host of things that are coming online with reservations in-house from parks all over the place. We've got things that are in need of the public accessing our website in a more aggressive way, that this is timely. So I could go justify this every day of the week and twice on Sunday. It's easy to do.
There is a cost for doing this badly or not doing it at all.
Yeah. What I wanted to say that dovetails into this, that I don't want to wait a week. By the end of October, by the second week in October, I want two videos from this new person, Jason. I want a video of Commissioner DeYoung and whoever he chooses to no more than 3 minutes to explain the Southern Oregon Marijuana Initiative. And I also would like one on the forestry program and specifically the salvage. I'm thinking we're missing, it came to me this morning, Channel 12 is out with Dave Streeter today taking a tour of the salvage situation. We have about 4 million board feet that didn't sell. And I think that if the timber industry understood, there's four partners that we have that purchase most of our sales. If they understood the efficacy of those timber sales is not money going into a timber baron's coffers or that private jet or whatever else that, you know, the Alan Fords of the world, and he's very magnanimous with the Ford family, Ford leadership, all that stuff. We invest this in our juvenile shelter facility, our veterans affairs, our CASA program, and now the CAC, and that tying that into them purchasing this wood should give them, they should have credit for that. But for them purchasing this stuff, this program wouldn't exist. The shelter wouldn't be open.
Yeah.
They need to be able to, we need to be able to tie that together, and that would be my goal in this video, that we expand the virtues of this program to people who are making it happen, the purchasers, might incentivize them to take a look at that wood that didn't sell.
I watch it on the automobile auctions. And in fact, my car was involved in it. One of the cars I built was involved in it with Sean Penn. But they put a car up, and that car may only be worth $50,000. But because it is attached to the Ronald McDonald House or St. Jude or something
right.
of that sort, holy cow. And those people then can put their name that they, you know what,
yeah.
I am community.
Yeah.
I'm a community person also. That sense of community. I'm going to go ahead and buy that stand of timber. I'm going to go ahead and buy it because I know the money's going to go back into my own community
exactly.
in the form of juvenile. You want to get that message out.
I want a video that captures that concept
yeah.
and then bring those regional purchasers in to a presentation where Streeter and I and Jim Goodwin and Lisa Shipley and all these people talk about the virtues of their program.
Right.
Show the video and show them this is what happens. This is this symbiotic relationship. That's why it's so important that you buy artwork. Much more different than a Hancock's that goes into, you know, a mutual fund somewhere traded on Wall Street. This comes right back to here. So anyway, that's just what came to me this morning. And so those are the two primary videos that I think. We're working on Parks videos. I checked in with Seth, and those are going to be ready by the end of October. When do you, I guess a timeline on this, you've got it. No, that's not an illustrated.
Start in October, ends in January.
Perfect. That's excellent, John. That's great timing. Appreciate your diligence on this. This is something you've been putting all of the pieces together in such a timely way with the person that we're hiring and putting it into the budget and the concept in the spring. Couldn't ask for a better delivery on this program and keeping your hand on the tiller.
Great. So, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. So we'll move this to admin?
No.
I think we just
did it.
We just, so we're all set.
I'll get you there. It's at legal now.
Great.
Item number C is human resources. J.J. Schofield.
Oh, geez.
Oh, man, it's me again.
Good morning, Commissioner.
Good morning. We have three items on here. C1 is job description update for the county clerk.
Before you start, it's really important, J.J., that the board receive timely updates of the hiring process. So it doesn't have to be done in public and probably shouldn't, but on a one-on-one basis or via email, it wouldn't be subject to public records request until after it was done. I'm going to give the example of the emergency services assistant. I'm not sure where that's at, and I know that we had those interviews and made that selection, but it's important. I would just encourage you to not just provide the update to potentially to the liaison.
Okay.
And I would like to have those regularly, understanding where they're at.
Okay, I'll make sure to do that.
Thanks.
So I have a few different job descriptions. We'll start with the clerk's one, I guess. So this is a position that was put into the budget, but we didn't do a job description until just recently. The
we have an election coming up. You're not going to be able to fill it. Or are you taking that position until it's filled?
So it's not a new position.
Oh,
it's just updating the job description.
Oh, okay.
So we have, she'd like to have a tiered position where you have the recording specialist one, recording specialist two.
Great.
And so it's already in the budget, just needed a job description to quantify that change. So there's no budgetary impact because it's already budgeted for, and it's not any new positions. It's just updating the description for the existing staff.
Okay.
So it should be it's a pretty simple thing. It just took a little bit because we had one that was just an individual, recording specialist was one position, and what she really wanted to have is a new person doesn't know the totality of the job for a year or two. There's a lot to learn, and it's rare that you have someone who takes that job who's ever done anything, especially with elections, because the only place you can do elections is in this office. So based on that, she wanted to have a tiered position to where once they're up to speed, they can move to specialist two. So that's the genesis of that job description. So
great.
Next I have airports. So currently in the budget is an airports maintenance position. It's a part-time position. And what Larry would like to do is have that position focus primarily just on landscaping, mowing the grass, so that his deputy can spend more time with maintenance and doesn't have to do that. Because it's not doing full maintenance, he wants to have a new job description. It's a slightly lower position, costs a little bit less. But really all they're doing is landscaping and mowing.
I noticed that in the job description, and I wonder if that's the best way to structure this. It's challenging to have the conversation without Ryan Johnson and Larry, but or even Parks. I don't like the idea that airports has. I don't feel like there's necessarily the need, or maybe I don't understand it, that there's a specialized person for doing something when we have John and facilities, and we have, a fairly well-qualified staff in parks, or even community corrections could occasionally have a crew go out there, and that could be on the rotation. I'm just wondering if there's a more strategic way that's outside of, you know, and airports has got to watch every dime, and if there's a more efficient, cost-effective way, has that been evaluated?
I think this is actually cheaper than those other options.
Okay.
Because our landscaper in facilities has a more comprehensive skill set, where this person really is just mowing lawns. That person understands some intricacies of horticulture and water lines and all that, and so they're doing a higher level work, and therefore they get paid more than this position does. So I think
the other alternative would be outsourcing to a private contractor to do that landscaping when there's a fair amount of landscaping in our region that's fairly seasonal, that it isn't the same workload all the time. And I'm just wondering whether or not all those things have been evaluated.
I don't know if he's looked at the possibility of outsourcing.
My question would be, I realize that summertime probably pretty busy, mm-hmm. but I don't know what they would do all winter long. If that's all they're doing, mowing yards, you know, it's keeping related equipment, including tractors, mowers, trimmers, and leaf blowers, proper upkeep and sidewalks, and cleanliness, parking lots, and aircraft taxiways. Groundworkers rake, blow, mulch leaves, mow large areas, and so on and so forth. But after the leaves are gone, what is the person going to do if he said, does he get laid off? Or...
I think I'd like to request that you work with HR. You heard the parameters. I think there were four different options that I was throwing out there, and there might be more.
Yeah.
I just want this one explored before
sure.
I move forward.
We can look more into it, and we'll bring it back.
Yeah, I think I just want to sit down with Larry and say, where did this come from?
We'll have all of the other options been explored.
Yeah.
And if this one's the most cost-effective, then I see that.
Right.
But really cost
now, I have a question. Like, for instance, if you turned it over to, you said, all right, fine. Park, you're going to go out here and take care of this. You're going to send a crew out there once a week to do everything. Does Parks then charge?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Charge to airports?
Yeah.
Yep. Airports is a very specific fund, more so even maybe than Parks. What do you call it? Enterprise fund?
Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
So those ones are...
So
whole known subsidiaries. So.
For this position, I'll talk to Larry, have him coordinate with you, and look at the variety of options. Mm-hmm. I mean, we could also look at, do we hire a temp for this? If it's truly
seasonal. I'd like to see what the cost implications would be if Parks charged to do this very same thing. Or if, but of course, when it's needed out of here, it's also there behind in their parks.
Mm-hmm.
The park system is huge.
You know, I'm not suggesting that that's the only alternative.
Yeah.
I'm
just kicking around in my mind. Let's take a little closer look at it if we could.
Sarah's on the cusp of having a need for one more half person, and this justifies having one more person, but that's included in their duties. It needs to be discussed and looked at from outside of the airport. I think that's advantageous.
Yeah, we can do
perfect.
That.
I'll coordinate with Larry and have him work with his liaison and look at some other options and see if this is the best one.
The element of freeing up the gentleman who resides, I believe, in the Illinois Valley Airport
mm-hmm.
to be able to do a little bit higher level things. I think that's a good. I see that, and that's a good objective. Whether we're accomplishing it in the right way.
We might be able to do it in a more cost-effective way.
Yeah, I don't think it's the best and highest use of his time to be, you know, mowing lawns mm-hmm. when he can do replacing hangar doors or something like that. That's the level of stuff that he should be doing.
Yeah.
Right.
I get that, but let's not. And, again, when we're doing something like this, an org chart is always helpful for me to understand. I don't know exactly how many FTEs we have. If we just have the one maintenance guy, and then we've got one
part-time
staff.
Maintenance, which is this position.
And then a part-time maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
Is it filled right now?
No.
Okay, so we would be looking to divest that person of these mm-hmm. low-level responsibilities. Perfect.
Yeah.
Get that.
Yeah.
That frees up Jason to go do what Jason needs to be doing.
Yeah.
Right? I agree.
Yeah.
I think that makes sense.
All right, so the last is three descriptions that are updating our current descriptions for our planners. From Julie's perspective, for the most part, a planner is a planner is a planner. You have a planner one position, which we almost never fill because it's designed really to be an introductory position. Really, it's for people who have very little experience, fresh out of college, and we almost never fill that position. They're almost always planner twos.
Filled it a couple of times, but that's okay.
All of our current planners are either planner two or planner three, and that's typically what we do. On occasion, we'll hire a planner one. And so we're not actually changing that structure. We're just calling it something more appropriate for what it is. It's an assistant planner. It's an introductory planner position. Salary stays the same. Instead of being called planner one, assistant planner. Associate planner is just your planner. You do a variety of planning jobs. Again, it's not a huge change. And then the last job description is she would like to have our most experienced planner really be a resource for the other planners. And that they do that work. They have the most expertise. They can do the most complex planning work, aggregate mining, those kind of challenging cases, but also help to lead the rest of the planners. And so she'd like to update that to make it more appropriate to show that they have some of that leadership in their job. So we want to change it from...
It goes to senior planner.
Yeah.
You're changing the name from 1, 2, and 3 to...
And we're putting in the job description that they have lead role responsibilities, so where they can direct staff on a day-to-day basis.
Frankly, I think this is quasi-happening already. This is reflecting what's really going on.
Yeah.
I don't want a junior planner presenting on cases that are going before the Rural Planning Commission, and I told her that, Julie. I want senior-level planners who can answer questions and have a comprehensive understanding of the code better than I do. If I ever see a planner up there presenting and they don't know it as well as I do, then that's not okay.
Yeah.
And I'm not an expert in it, but I do have, you know, good working understanding of it. So I think this works really well. It gives people the opportunity to not have all of that pressure to be at that level. It actually is going to, I think, help. I don't necessarily, I'm warming up to the regional element. She has planners broken up into certain regions, so they're working with the same clients over and over again. I said, I don't like that structure from a standpoint that you potentially have a junior planner assigned to the North Valley area dealing with aggregate operations. And she says, this alleviates that. When you put in a senior planner, those level, it's all,
right.
every region has their own lower level ability to do those things, but the higher level, this senior or lead planner, is the person who would handle those countywide. And that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because currently, a fairly junior planner is handling a MARS application in the Illinois Valley, and it's not appropriate. It's taking longer than it should, and it's a learning experience that the client is ending up having to pay for at a time that is not what we should be doing, in my opinion. So I think this is somewhat of a reflection of addressing those needs, I hope.
Okay.
Good.
So we talked about being more efficient with job descriptions and having them approved at this meeting. Based on that, I would say we don't have enough to approve the airport. We want some more work done that. But what I'm hearing is that the other four appears that we have enough for our vote to approve.
Yeah, I think general consensus of the board is just fine for these.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
When I've looked around at other counties, they don't go to a formal meeting to approve job descriptions. And, you know, the dynamic element of working with the people that you have and their work history and experience reflecting that, we shouldn't be so rigid that we can't accommodate that the changing dynamic of the resources and the staff that we have, and it shouldn't be held up by having to go that. So in my opinion, I think here is the appropriate place. This is a total internal.
Right. I don't think we have any question about these three, except on airports. We just wanted, I think, clarity as to what's the guy going to do in the wintertime.
I was talking about refining the process of approving these things.
Right.
Yeah. Ideally, I would like every single one of these, though, to be checked off with the liaison before they come here to the full board. That would be ideal for me, that those kinds of, and that's the lens that I would look through it as a liaison, is I've explored all the potential opportunities and nuances, and I can defend why we're doing what we're doing. In conjunction with the manager, that we're both on the same page and this is right. That's what I was.
Okay.
I think it's great.
All right.
Thank you, Jay.
Thank you.
Next up, item D, Scott Chancy. Item D1 is Josephine County Transit Vehicle Replacement Plan of 8/23/2018.
Good morning.
Thanks, Scott.
So this is.
Welcome back.
Yeah, thank you. This is an informational item, and it will be officially recognized by this body as an appendix of the Transit Master Plan. The reason it wasn't part of the Transit Master Plan to begin with is because I didn't feel it was appropriate to spend, you know, $100 an hour on a consultant that could easily put together, or that could put together something that I can easily just take from our vehicle inventory list. So what this essentially is it's a capital replacement plan as part of the recommended STIF projects. There's going to be vehicle replacements, so this document outlines why the vehicles need to be replaced, what vehicles are being replaced, and what schedule. So basically, it's a kind of an informational item. If anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them, but there's just a few things I'd just quickly point out. On the vehicle fleet, even though it says it states LF, means low-floor vehicle. Low-floor vehicle, if you don't know, just means that there's no steps to get into it. So it allows somebody that's using a mobility device or somebody that has mobility issues to enter the vehicle quicker, and it provides better access for them. Essentially, the vehicles that are listed in pink are beyond their useful life. I left the useful life on there. The other thing that I did is I also outlined how many miles a day, month, year our routes are traveling to give you an idea of kind of the maintenance schedule. So most of our vehicles now, and this is part of our challenge, the maintenance interval is every 3,000 miles. So as you can see, if I put one vehicle on Route 10, or two vehicles, they're both going to have to go through PMI within a month. So the other thing I wanted to point out that I put in here, and it was important, is I talked about I'm going to be purchasing two or four Class A vehicles, two Class D vehicles. I will be in front of this body again next week with a PO for the purchase of two of those vehicles, so just FYI. And the other thing that I wanted to point out real quick is because I put it in here twice because I think it is important for various reasons, but future vehicle replacements, we should be making sure that we maintain a diversification of our fuel type. We do talk, or I have talked about electric buses. There's been some talk of CNG or alternative fuels.
What's the advantage of having a diverse? Is that making it more challenging for mechanical elements, or is it?
It's somewhat, but the base components of the vehicle themselves don't change. So the brakes, the air conditioning, all the components. But the diversification of the fuel
system.
The
brakes are not different on an electric vehicle versus?
Somewhat.
Understanding that there's a recharging component to the braking.
There is, but the brake itself is pretty much the components are the same.
That's the only element. I mean, that the system is probably different past that. Brake pad and shoe.
I'm assuming that it's all the same from what I've talked to them about. But the diversification is because I've seen this happen several times. Is if you don't have a diversification of your fuel type, you can get caught in essentially a budget issue where all of a sudden the price spikes on one fuel type and you're stuck with it. So I've seen that happen with CNG. Or even diesel in reverse. So if you looked at what was going on in 2009, there was a lot of the fuel prices went up. There was a lot of agencies that got caught essentially because they were stuck with diesel. It's the same thing in reverse. If we go to electric, my recommendation was don't go 100% electric, because if something happens to the power grid or something like that, then you have no ability to get your vehicles running. You can look at RV. You can look at the transit agency to the south, and they probably have the largest strategic diesel supply in their area, even larger than ODOT. So those are some things to keep in mind. The last thing that's on here is as a continuation, when the vehicles get disposed, I would recommend that we continue with the program that we do now, where we allow for applications from other nonprofits to request the receivership of those vehicles once we dispose them. Typically, our vehicles are beyond their useful life, according to the Federal Transit Administration, but they're still good vehicles. They're not the best for us in terms of day-to-day operations because we stop a lot. There's a lot of passengers, a lot of weight, but a lot of the agencies don't put their vehicles under that kind of pressure, and so I would suggest we continue with that program. So essentially, that's what the capital replacement program is.
So your capital replacement schedule could change depending on the transit systems routes. I know that that's a consideration that you're working on. And so if your route, if your routes expand, say for instance, that we now provide, in the future we provide service to Murphy or some other areas that we don't currently, your useful life or the time expectancy, like if you buy a vehicle and it's supposed to last 4 years, but you're doing a little bit more on it than you used to be doing on the weekends, later hours, instead of 4 years, you're only getting three. And is that a fiscal thing that you're prepared to deal with?
I look at, for the most part, not just the years exclusively. The miles. I look at the miles.
Yeah.
So what it does is to add more services speeds that up. So if I would expect to have to replace something in 12 years, but we've added, you know, a third more mileage, I'm now looking at I got to replace it quicker. And the other thing with this is, because we're seeing it now, is it's imperative that you adhere to your replacement schedules based on what those criteria are with miles or something like that. Because if you don't, then your maintenance expense can grow exponentially, which we're kind of experiencing now.
How's your training for your drivers that they're, you know, doing what they need to be doing? Because it's a lot different than when you're driving, you know, say, for instance, Commissioner DeYoung's truck, whatever it's worth. These buses are not cheap. They're driving $250,000 down the road. That's as much as these people, most people, like some people's home.
Right.
And I wonder if they're aware, you know, that that's the value of this vehicle that you've been entrusted to. So when you're putting your brakes on and turning and everything you're doing, hitting that curve or whatever, I've always experienced that every driver that I've seen when I've been on the bus system, they do a really good job. I think that they're not lurching forward and using a lot, but every once in a while I'll watch and I see some driving in certain areas and it's like, that's not how that bus should be, that van should be driven. So
I think that comes with, you know, a friend of mine owns a big trucking company. And he has some drivers that just never wear a transmission out or a rig out. They just never wear it out. And then other ones beat it to death in 6 months.
I just wonder if people are getting trained in the appropriate way to utilize on a regular basis.
They're getting trained in the initial driver training. So the problem, it's not a problem. One of the challenges is the autonomy that the drivers have, so there's not someone looking at them all the time. With that said,
do you do random audits?
We do.
To be like, you know, incognito boss, right?
No, I've had this discussion with my operations supervisor a bunch of times, and so when the employees come up with their annual review, part of that review is a ride-along, and what we've come to the conclusion of, and this has been verified, is if someone's driving incorrectly, irregularly, lurching, those kind of things, you can hide it for a little bit, but it's ingrained in how you drive. So even though that the operations supervisor is doing a ride along with them with a checklist of all of these things that she's reviewing, it'll start to show itself. So we're pretty comfortable.
You don't have to be incognito to get that.
Nope. So like I said, if you don't use your blinker every time, you might realize, and this is just an example.
Yeah.
So you might realize, you know, the operations supervisor is sitting on the bus watching you, but you're going to forget that. So if she's riding around for an hour, hour and a half, at some point it's going to be pretty obvious that that is not a regular part of your driving experience or what you normally
do. It's your habit.
Right, it's your habit, correct.
Right.
But with that said, we still see it.
Yeah.
So we still see it, and it's hard to pinpoint. Typically what we'll find is that it'll come from the maintenance department saying something's going on with this vehicle. And we can track the vehicle back to the driver or a route or something and try to go through it, but it's a challenge.
Yeah. They don't have recorders on board like a black box, right?
We do.
Yeah.
We do have recorders like a black box. We can tell speed. What we will soon be able to do is be able to tell a hard brake event, meaning if they jam on the brakes. We can tell those things. We can tell if the lights are on or off or those kind of things. But still, it doesn't tell you certain things. So, for example, I'll just tell you, there was a driver.
Lane change. It doesn't say lane changes or anything like that.
No, it doesn't. And if it would be like a normal brake. It's not going to tell you if the emergency brake goes on. So The emergency, just as an example, the emergency brake needs to be deployed before the lift can come out or the ramp can come out. Well, one driver thought it was time-consuming to pull up to the stop and put the emergency brake on and then put the lift out. So their approach to that, in their mind, time-consuming issue was to put the emergency brake on as they were approaching the stop. So you can probably tell what that does mechanically to the vehicle. Now, how that happened, I'm not quite sure, but it takes a while to kind of figure those things out. But we do try our best, but it is an issue that we constantly...
It'll come to bear at some point in time when the lift gate's ripped clear off the side of the bus, and you go, well, how'd you do that if
you were stopped? Or the emergency brake doesn't work anymore because they've just been using it as their stopping instead of the regular brake.
Exactly, you mentioned right. That your routine maintenance was every 3,000 miles. Is that like oil changes and stuff?
It's a preventive maintenance. There's a list that they go through. So, yes, it's oil change. They check suspension components. They check the lift. There's a predetermined list of things that they go through. And so it's a PMI, or preventive maintenance inspection, which includes oil. We're typically checking brakes.
You don't change oil every... going back to the friend of mine as a trucking company, he wouldn't be able to drive across the United States without stopping to get the oil change somewhere.
Yeah, no, we have to adhere to that, and we actually get audited based on that.
Oh, okay.
So our entire fleet, 80% of it needs to be within 10% of that maintenance interval.
You have a maintenance schedule. Okay.
Which also explains why these vehicles are in very good condition, and when we dispose of them,
500,000 miles.
Exactly.
Okay. Do you have? Are you online yet to see buses where they are?
We're working through it right now.
Okay, great.
So that's cool. That's going to be happening. So we'll go live in 3 weeks.
Great.
And then we'll start to advertise it. So. That was it for the vehicle or capital replacement plan. It was it's going to come back as part of another document, so I wanted to make sure I got it to you before it got to you the next time.
Great. Now, I noticed on and this is a little off the subject, but you can answer it anyway, or just something that's on the radar. Before we get started on our hub over here, you've got 5 different shelters that you're going to put up there?
There'll be 6, yeah.
6 shelters?
Mm-hmm.
Let's not try to over-engineer those. I mean, I go over to the VA domiciliary and they have the extruded aluminum ones that, you know, glass on 3 sides, and if the person's in there, they're out of the wind, out of the rain, versus what we got talked into at the city down here.
Correct.
I want something that's serviceable and inexpensive rather than cute.
I'm glad you brought that up. There's a lot of stuff that just goes on under the radar that I wouldn't normally think to mention, but I've been in contact with the Oregon Department of Corrections, so they have an engineering department made up of inmates, and they are getting into the bus shelter manufacturer business. So I've already been in contact with them, told them what I wanted to see in a bus shelter. They've re-engineered one, and it's considerably cheaper than anything we've seen in the past.
That's, you know, like I said, when you get some folks involved, and you say, you know, I want to hear your opinion. The next thing you know, you end up with something like this, and, you know, that's going to haunt this city forever.
Well, you know, if it's 6 shelters, and, you know, I think I can't remember what the budget is, but let's just say, you know, 90,000, I mean, that's ridiculous to spend $540,000 of a transit hub on nothing but shelters. I couldn't in good conscience do that.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
The next item up, and I need direction because there's an application for the STIF funding, and it's due November 1st. So what I wanted to do is bring in front of this body. I met with the Special Transportation Advisory Committee. They made some recommendations on what the funding goes for. So we have 3 years of funding that have to be in this application that's due November 1st. If I don't put it in November 1st, then my next opportunity is in May, and then the funds won't be available until halfway through the next year. So I'd rather get on it sooner rather than later.
What are the general parameters for the funds?
There are none other than they have to be for transit service improvements or improvements to the existing system.
What about like a third lane on 199 between?
Yeah.
Just kidding.
I I could if it was a bus. If it was a bus-only lane.
They're trying to include everybody we can.
I don't mind starting it out.
Red Pass High School swim team so they can get back and forth to the Y easier.
So the first year of funding is half a year, and it's April of 2019 is when I expect that the funds will be here, and it's $332,000. That's not enough funding to put in service yet, but it is enough funding to provide the local match for current vehicle requests. And as I had mentioned from the capital plan, we're looking at 5 vehicles now. So it can cover part of that, and it can cover part of what I would consider infrastructure improvements or things that are needed, such as we need to replace our video systems in all of our vehicles. We're not getting good enough support, and I think it's antiquated technology. I need more benches, trash cans, things like that. So that's what those funds will be providing for. There's some unfunded things as well as part of this list. ODOT wants to see if we have projects that go above what we have. They want to make sure that we include them on our list. So there's a certain subset of projects that are unfunded. But anyway, for the most part, that's what we're looking at spending the entire $332,000 on. About $78,000 of that will go to match existing operating funds, which will just go in to support our services that we have now. They're fine with that. But then the next one is July. And as if you recall, we had a list of service improvements that we were looking at. So Saturday service was the first, later evening service, improved service frequency, commuter route improvements, and additional routes possibly out to Murphy or up into the north side of Grants Pass. So after I brought that to the board before, my direction was is make sure that we can sustain those improvements. Whatever we do, let's make sure we do it. So I started to crunch the numbers, put together a package to this Special Transportation Advisory Committee, and they gave me more refined direction on what to make those improvements are on. And so what their conclusion was is Saturday should be the first improvement. Well, the problem, it's not a problem. Based on my crunching of the numbers, based on a couple other variables and factors, I came in over about $110,000 more than the consultant that did our transit master plan thought that would cost. And me not feeling comfortable just using their numbers, I feel more comfortable with mine. That would be the only service improvement that would be recommended starting July 19th. So it would be Saturday only. So the later
margin of error on between theirs and yours. Are you 50% higher than their proposal, or is it 10%?
Well, it's 110, so that's about 20%. Okay. What it comes down to is there's some unknowns here. Maintenance staff is a huge one. Yeah. Dispatch staff is another huge one. That's where I'm at. I mean, it's very easy to figure out, okay, the bus is going to travel 10 hours a day. Here's my labor cost for that driver. Here's the gas cost or the maintenance cost. Very easy to take care of.
Are you able to juggle your schedule so that the Saturday guy isn't on overtime?
We'll have to do that. Yeah, they'll have to be new drivers. But the problem is, do we have the options are, is a maintenance person on call, or do we have to hire a maintenance person new to be in there for Saturday? If we hire somebody new in on Saturday, we have to hire two people, because we can't have one person in the shop alone at any given time. So that's maintenance or fleet policy. So then the question is if we use somebody that's on call, is on call sufficient to handle our maintenance requirements on Saturday alone? So we have to make that decision.
What would somebody do? I mean, I can understand maintenance 5 days a week, but why would you have to have somebody in there on Saturday in the shop? In case something breaks down?
Yes, in case something breaks down. So examples of this would be, and these happen, all of a sudden the airbag ride system on the bus decides it doesn't want to refill itself. So let's say the bus driver pulls to a stop, and the bus is lower to change that ramp angle. So the bus pulls up to a stop, somebody needs to get on with a mobility device, they need the bus lower, the driver kneels the bus, and then all of a sudden they start to leave the stop and the bus will not refill itself. the airbag system has some sort of malfunction, won't refill itself. We can't leave that vehicle out on the road. We got to go do something about it. Now, whether that's they pull it into the shop real quickly and the maintenance guy goes, oh, you tripped a fuse, I know what this is, and they fix it, or we pull it from service or something like that. Or if a vehicle breaks down, sometimes the maintenance person is used to bring another vehicle out to the disabled bus, transfer the driver passengers onto the new bus, and then he figures out what's going on with the old bus and then takes it back to the yard. It could be as simple as all of a sudden there's headlights that are out. The driver notices once they get to the, after they've been in service, so they've already gone through a pre-trip and everything, notice that headlights are out, a blinker is out.
What is our capacity to handle those issues? Just any mechanical issue is a replacement until Monday. When a mechanic looks at it, that would be the most cost effective in my mind, is that you're, maybe you have another bus driver on retainer or something like that who's on call, who's able to come in and do that bus transfer situation in the event. You'd almost have to like test it on a Thursday and say, we're not going to mechanically address any issue for the next 2 months on Thursdays, and give it a test and say, how often does this happen on one particular day? There's, you know, four times a month there's something that happens. So you have an expectation of this is what you're going to need to do. And, yeah, you've got every one of those situations. You had a substitute bus available to just plug into the fleet, pull the other one, and you could survive for a day without a mechanic. That would be maybe your 20% margin of error that you could get in.
That is exactly what the 20% margin of error is. So what I'm, what I budgeted for is two maintenance staff in the building. I don't think we need that. If you looked at where I'm about to replace six vehicles, yeah, I think our maintenance needs are less.
Right.
These are also higher mileage vehicles, meaning they don't have to have that. So I budgeted two maintenance.
They're more heavy duty?
That's exactly right. So I budgeted two maintenance people. We're going on call.
Yeah.
But until we kind of see how this plays out, I don't want to go with the less expensive.
But there's stuff they can do. I mean, if the guy's not just going to be standing there waiting for a breakdown on Saturday,
correct,
you will be able to schedule him to say, okay, I want you to do the planned maintenance on bus 7 and 7 through 12.
Correct.
So he'll just have regular duties to do on Saturday, but he'll be there in case of.
Correct. And then the other side of that is we need to make sure that there's the possibility that two people being on staff on Saturday helps tremendously with any backlog of maintenance that required Monday through Friday.
You won't have all your buses out on Saturday.
No,
will you?
No.
Certain routes, so there
correct.
Will be buses in there that instead of taking them out of service during the 5-day work week,
correct,
you'll be able to take care of the maintenance on Saturday. Monday, they're ready to rock and roll.
Yeah, I wonder if there's even like a scheduled of holding back some that have passed their useful life, they're still workable, you know, and instead of, you know, you've got maybe one or two of those just in retainer for a little while.
I think he has three. You have three in standby.
Yeah, but I mean, instead of kicking them to the next nonprofit that applies for them, you might hold one back or something like that.
I will until I know that we're going to be audited again, because I can only have so many. But those are all valid points.
Stuff I'm sure you're thinking about.
Yeah, and
so,
what I did is I budgeted more than I think I'm going to need, just to make sure. The other part of that is how many dispatchers do I need? Now, getting back to real quick what Commissioner Harrod said, yeah, maintenance guy, just come take the bus out, let him deal with it on Monday. I think that's what that's what I think we can do. But until we put it in practice,
yeah,
I don't know yet. So then the other question would be dispatchers.
Doesn't even have to be, in my opinion, and you would know this better. Even a maintenance guy couldn't be a normal driver, which I think is less than, you know, your $50 an hour maintenance guy, I suppose. So,
not sure. I end up with fleet maintenance if they would agree to do that, or sometimes there is a question, whereas can we drive this bus or do we need to pull it from service? So that question would have to. I'm not comfortable letting the driver make that. But so then there's some dispatching staff. You know, can I do it with one person, or is it going to cost or need to be 2.5? I budgeted 2.5. I'm going to put one in and see if we can handle it.
Sure.
So what I've basically done is I've estimated the cost higher than I think they're actually going to come in. and I'm stating, let's not put in any other service other than Saturday until these questions get answered. Once these questions get answered, then we'll move down the list.
Okay.
And so that's what basically our plan states. So what the remainder of the funds from what our formula funds is, what I'm saying Saturday is going to cost, I'm saying let's just put them in contingency and let's just let them sit there.
Explain to me the April and July, because are we adding those two together? Are you going to get
no.
$1,000,001?
Yes. I mean, there's 3 years there, essentially. So that's what our three-year total is. I just have to put in the application by November. So okay. There's three formula fund allocations. There's one that's going to be April 2019. The next one will be covered the entire fiscal year, so July 2019. And then there's July 2020.
Okay, so you're doing all three of these applications under one.
Correct.
Okay.
So that's what we've done. And there's some other things on unfunded projects. Those are there if more funds comes through. But the main thing that I wanted to get direction from the county commissioners on is to move forward on this application.
Totally.
I don't need a formal approval. I just need we agree. We think that Saturday is the most important. Let's do that. Let's figure out what Saturday is going to cost us. And until then, that's all we're going to do.
That sounds great. And I think Commissioner Morgan has reiterated that as a priority of hers over and over again. So your application, does it require a signature of the board? And if so, I delegate your liaison and the chair to do that.
My application will require I don't know. You know, I haven't even looked at the application.
Don't worry about it if it does.
If it does, we'll just make sure it's all three of us. We'll get it done.
Okay, so I'll move forward with that, but I just wanted to make sure that I had some direction first, and so we'll go straight forward with the application.
Scott, I really appreciate your process of going to the advisory committee first, coming here, getting their input, reiterating what theirs is, exploring every potential option, and you know, you really think about your program in the most efficient way to provide the best service at the lowest cost. And you know, it's that bus question's always going to be sitting out there, but I have no reason. If that had never happened at the city, we would have no reason on this side of the table to ever question you purchasing $106,000 bus shelters. That's not coming out of a reflection of you.
No.
It's just the times and the environment and where we're at. You do a good job. And I would, sooner rather than later, at whatever point you've got it convenient, to take a look at I've seen general diagram of that proposed project at the hub, but I think that would be, you know, really good for all of us to maybe even have a picture of it on our wall so we, you know, we can look at it and salivate.
No, I think it's fantastic to have future projects, art conception. What have we got in the till? You know, we've got that hub, we've got the arena, and what the artist conception of the arena is supposed to cost. I think those are all things that, you know, show that you're
moving on
you've got your day-to-day, but for crying in the bucket, you're thinking outside the box and you're thinking to the future. And people can, wow, that's what that hub's going to look like? You bet it is.
I agree 100% because there's some misconception of what it could look like or what it is going to and what I want it to look like. And once I get our grant agreements and stuff in place, I will hire a firm that will come up with some conceptual drawings.
What is your stylistic element? Because we're kind of working on, we approved a branding element earlier. I'm working on getting a specific design for signage that would be for the board to approve, but I've got preliminary concepts that we're going to be branding all of our park entrances, potentially a sign at the sheriff's department, airports, the industrial park, other, you know, maybe public works in your facility out there, that it's all kind of a brand that you know you're in a Josephine County facility when you see this Northwest timber style frame, A-frame. It reflects the current design of the logo in that A-frame style, Northwestern style. I can ship you a picture of it. I don't know if there's an even opportunity for something like that.
There probably is.
And it would be interesting if we could, you know, it's going to differentiate us from anything and everything. But you'll know when you're in a Josephine County facility because they will all have this stylistic. And we're getting the logs from the salvage burn that didn't sell. I talked to Streeter yesterday about that and a miller. We're getting all that lined up to have it probably ready to put into place in the spring. So, That might be something we could integrate. I don't know.
I think it very well could. My only stylistically, the only objection or objective I have is to make sure it's not just transit, because, and what I mean by that is, if you look at some of the facilities that are used for transit, they the standard joke is, you know, it needs to be able to last in a prison because of the abuse that it takes day to day.
Sure.
And I think that's the wrong approach. Instead of getting equipment that's bulletproof, essentially, my approach is to get people to respect the equipment first. So
sure.
As long as that's happening, I don't want it, you know, looking all concrete and industrialized just because it's a transit facility. No, I want it looking something that the passengers respect,
yeah,
the community respects, and then
make it look nice enough that they don't want to beat it up.
That's exactly right, and
That's a great strategy.
Yeah, it's a reflection of my respect or our respect for the community, because these aren't our dollars. Well,
yeah,
technically, they're all of our dollars.
Right,
but
recycled.
That's where I'm coming from. Now, what that looks like, I'll leave that up to an architect or some other design or.
Well, and my concept is just the frame. I'm not dictating what goes in the 4x6 or whatever space
right.
was delineated for the sign. I don't really. That's up to other people. I'm just staying from a stylistic. That's the only thing that I have. I don't feel as though there's an interaction with the public, so it shouldn't get abused. I mean, I know that there's always an opportunity for everything to have abuse. But the idea is that we would have theoretically 4 or 5 of these in the queue, that if something happens to it, the next week it's just replaced with a brand new one. And so we have 20 park locations. I can see us making 30 of these, and we store them at the fairgrounds or at the parks office or something like that, to where they can just be bolted right back on the foundation.
I agree.
Place like
at
that.
The risk of not micromanaging, we could just say also the facility, the hub itself, has a sign that reflects the Josephine County, identifying it as this is your service hub for Josephine County Transit, and then the shelters could be maybe your prison style, you know. But I agree with Commissioner Hare that if we start this branding, it needs to be consistent on everything we do. At some level.
And I agree 100%.
Great.
I mean, so I would definitely look forward to it.
Okay.
This is cool.
We'll work together on that.
And it should be so cost effective from the standpoint that the inputs are at cost. We're getting the wood because it's ours for free. We're basically recycling dead and dying salvaged timber. And, you know, Dave's like, I think we can log out the 6 truckloads of wood you're going to need. It's a big project because we're also doing siding on the fairgrounds. On the arena, and that's 14,000 linear feet, board feet, not linear feet. And so that's pretty substantial. That's going to take about 4 or 5 truckloads. And then this project alone of all these signs, framing and stuff, I don't know how that's all going to work out, but that's a truckload or two. So he's talking about doing all the logging for that. I've got a miller lined up. I think we're going to do it at the fairgrounds and store it for the winter. It's the best time to be drying slowly fur so it doesn't check. And it can be, you know, the contractor can be building these things over time. We put the siding on the arena in the spring, and it all just comes together.
Maybe there's an opportunity to incorporate more than just a sign into the entire project design. I mean, I as much as, you know, maybe there's a way to incorporate that even into the shelters. I've seen it at other agencies such as Flagstaff, Arizona.
Interesting. And a few
other communities. And, I mean, that's a large community.
Right.
It's working there, I'm sure it could work here.
Okay.
So I'll definitely explore that option.
Well, I'll send you the design concept that I have. It's very simple. It's just a wood frame. I mean, Gates Home Furnishing style of their sign deal.
Right.
It's not rocket science.
Yeah, definitely send it, and then that way I have it in my package, and
yeah,
I got something to go with.
Cool.
Okay.
All right, well, thank you.
Thank you, Scott. Next up, item number 2, finance report and business update.
Arthur.
You can get through the crowd to get up here and have a seat.
Yeah.
Kiss the boards today.
Everybody's waiting. Yeah, the first thing, a couple weeks ago, you did the board ask for financial update or review. I will request that deferral till at least I'll say the 11th, perhaps.
Oh, certainly. We're not in any hurry. I know you're doing audit preparations this week, and you're down a rower in your boat.
So we've got the auditors coming next Monday that are going to be doing the jail detention review or agreed upon procedures. Yeah, the levy.
Great.
The levy piece. So that's happening next week. Then they're going to miss a week, and then the following week after that, they'll do the countywide audit. So I don't expect the results from those audits until probably into late November, at least preliminary. They go through internal reviews and they compile. A lot of this work is just going to be the testing of the transactions, reviewing the documents that they have and the controls to see how do you make sure this person is assigned to this part, assigned to patrol versus jail. How do you allocate those and how do you determine that? So they're going to be going through all those things. Sandy is coordinating it from our office. Ruth Nelson and Susan Rial from Juvenile and from Sheriff's Office are all up to date and ready to work with these folks. So I anticipate very successful without any issues.
We're going to likely request a specific presentation on the levy outcomes. This being the first year of implementing it, it should be a routine element, and that we do that at a weekly business session. And I wouldn't want it watered down potentially with the normal audit. And I know that could be challenging for our auditor, but I know we're paying more for this specific kind of audit.
Yes.
We haven't done this except for 1 year a long time ago outside the animal shelter. I think it's really important that we lean into that one pretty specifically, have a press release prior to that audit report, and that it be highlighted in a very specific way. So
audit presentation at the weekly business.
Yes, please.
And even, as you said, press release, make sure that the folks are aware of that.
Yep. Does that sound appropriate?
Oh, yeah, boy. Absolutely. I think it's more important now than ever because into that first year levy, we just got to make sure because we said in campaign it was all going to go there. We need to prove that. That's what this audit will
do. That's
what
this audit is.
Exactly what happened. So you get the people, oh, see, I told you they're going to spend it somewhere else. That just won't happen with an audit.
Good. That's a good thing.
Back to your financial report, one of the things that I think that is advantageous, if you could provide in your presentation, a review of the last several years of a progression of the positive fiscal situation, specifically with ending fund balances and reserves. I think that is something that not everybody can even digest and appreciate, the struggle that it has been to get parks to an ending fund balance in the positive significantly as opposed to where they used to be, where they didn't have a capital reserve. They had a $250,000, give or take, deficit in their property capital improvement plan resources, and now they have $1 million positive reserve. Those are not chump change things that have been accomplished by a team of people working diligently on property sales, reducing liability. I want to be able to tell this message by the end of the year to kind of codify all of the progress that has been made, not just reflecting my two terms in office, but to give a foundational understanding for whoever wins the November election, and really for this current board, that we've never really gone through the progression of. We were, Parks was 200 and change in the hole in a capital stance, but also from an operational stance 8 years ago.
Yeah.
So if you look at that holistically, if they had to write a check for, you need to shore yourself up and close your books tomorrow, they're writing a check for $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
And now they've got 1.5 to the good. That's a $3 million.
We always treat it in business. If you were to close the door today,
what do you owe?
What do you look like?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Are you going to walk away with something, or are they going to walk away with what you have?
And they were in the hole by $500,000 or so, and now they've got 1.5. If they were to look at their books right now,
In response to the letter, that's not the letter. It was the article that said we lost $192,000 in cancellations.
Right.
Oh, but you got it back for 114 of that back. I was thinking, but what kind of shape do these fire crews leave that facility in when they leave? Do we have to go in and put another $76,000 redoing the grass that they trampled down with their tents?
Yeah.
Do we have to go in and fix roads that their big water trucks broke down while they were there for
'cause that's not what the paving was engineered for when we first put
it in. That's not exactly. That's not at all what it was made for. So, and what a concept saying that it's okay. It's an almost a net wash because you have the Forest Service here because of wildfires. So what do we do? Do we use that? Do we budget for that? That we're going to burn 140,000 acres every year uncontrollably so that we can get the money back? And those parks, the park system was not meant as an emergency facility. It's meant for recreation and tourism. And if we have to devote it to it, there is surely a cost to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, not being
not
able to
only
be
the
used
revenue
to
of the people
original
that
original
can't put in there.
The long-term effect of telling $192,000 worth of reservations, there's a person behind a family, a reunion,
right.
A weekend away that didn't happen,
right.
They're not coming back
no.
next year. If you go and you have a bad experience in a hotel where they tell you, I'm sorry.
You never go back.
It didn't work out. You can't stay here. What are you talking about? Where else are we supposed to go? This is the prime vacation season. Every place that's worth its salt is booked up. And now
as
I have nowhere
as
to go.
Our park system was, because it is worth its salt.
And now there's no place to go to these families. That's huge. Mm-hmm. It's a bad taste, and you didn't even get an opportunity.
Yeah.
They didn't. It's not a reflection of your
system.
So
to say the 114 is some sort of a, it's okay because you got 114.
It's short-sighted.
I disagree with that.
Yeah.
All
anyway, what else you got?
Oh, yes, sure. So I do have conference in a few weeks. I'll be gone Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Sandy will be here, and Deanna and the crew. The two vehicles that I had mentioned, just to bring it to your attention, the sheriff is requesting a vehicle, a transport van.
It's a transport vehicle. You and I both fell into the exact same trap. I thought it was a van.
It's an SUV?
It's not. It's a box truck.
Box truck.
Oh, it's like an Astro.
It's a cab chassis with a box on it, with the transport box on the back of it. I thought it was a van, you know, like a extended Ford van with the cage in the windows or whatever.
Yeah, did he buy it already?
No, he's requesting approval to buy it, and it'll go through fleet. I mean, they'll get it, but it's a fairly expensive van. They're talking about $40,000. They're calling it a transport van, which is by the confusion. But then the point being that this may come back as a supplemental. I'm not sure. It just depends on the fleet budget and what they buy or don't buy or what they move forward with or don't.
And so, is this just to facilitate court appearances?
I don't think it's just court. I think it's for all inmate transport.
Right. Do they transport them to the prison facility in Shawford?
Or they
is that
move people.
That's interesting. I don't
over.
Know. Do we take them to the prison, or do they?
I think we do.
Yeah,
because I asked Sheriff about this particular thing. I said, "So what happens when it breaks down?" He says, "It has been. It's a real sticky situation. But now you got to go out and get those people."
Yeah.
And
yeah, the current one is at end of life, is what they're saying, and they're
right.
looking to replace it with this one that has a removable box, which is the key
right.
here, so that they can replace the chassis, the engine, the piece,
buy a cabin chassis, you take one box off, put it on the other.
That's what Alpine does. They've had that same box in four trucks since I was a kid.
So I think, you know, this is the first time I think this is the first, that's why it's going to be.
Yeah.
It's $90,000 for the cabin chassis and the box. But the box portion of it.
No, I said 40.
I think it's 90 total.
I can weld up this box in the weekend. Don't worry about it.
Go ahead.
Oh, you are right. Public Works is willing to spend 50, and
right.
we would need an additional 40 to replace the vehicle and purchase a vehicle that has a removable box on the
right.
back.
They're strapped in and everything, so they don't really get a chance to tear it apart. They're not left unrestrained in the box.
Oh, the inmates, right.
So the box should last.
Right. If the truck breaks out, you can send out a low boy, just pick the box up, put it on a low boy.
The whole truck?
And away you go.
Ship it up and then bring
and
it
the
back.
People.
Yeah. Okay.
But I think moving forward, this is a different one than what they've been doing before. Because you'd have to replace the whole vehicle before every time, and this you'll at least be able to retain part of it.
Right, and the more complicated part of it.
Right, the part that need that has
more
the
specific
requirements.
Chevy Astro van, they're restrained. How are you getting out? Why does it have to be so? I don't know.
I'd say go out here and get one of Colvin's old fuel trucks and just put them inside one of the
chain gangs and skateboards. That's what I say.
Why aren't they walking to prison?
What's up with that?
No, but I just...
It seems expensive, but that's why the request comes
But it's. I think it's a change in the method.
Well, and he does make some references
thing.
To
one
industry standards, too.
I would just request that all potential alternatives that would be cheaper. I can see running a Chevy Astro van that you buy for 120,000 miles. You don't need to replace the box. You just replace the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's what they're built for. They're on a truck chassis.
They're a purpose vehicle, that's for sure.
And well, he's saying the setup has become industry standard in Oregon for what appears to be an economic savings at the end. But, however, there's more money up front. So his perspective is that this is a savings in the end when we end up having to replace vehicles
in the
long term.
In law enforcement, you've got to be fairly consistent with other entities so that you don't show all of a sudden you have a weakness that people can focus on. Well, the people got away because you didn't have the right van.
I just want the diligence to be done on this. I don't want to be able to take 20 minutes, make a phone call to Coos County, make a phone call to Marion County. How do you transport your people to and from court into prison? We do it in a Chevy Astro van, and we paid $34,000 for it, $45,000 for it. Really? Interesting. I have a proposal for $90,000, you know, and the cost savings is a $20,000 box at the end of the life in 5 years. I spent 90 and I saved 20. I'm still spending more over 5 years than I would have had I spent $4,500.
One thing we really need to caution is because when law enforcement and fire entities and stuff, they go to convention, it's all the latest and greatest and the newest, and you got
to
have...
Well, that's what our job is for. That's why it comes
that's
through
why it
here.
Comes to
so
here.
If we...
I'll confirm.
If we did that diligence...
Exactly.
Then we're good, because you're liaison to fleet and sheriff, so... Yeah.
I think he did, but I'll confirm.
I did.
I'm sure.
And the second one, again, is almost is the facilities is replacing a van. This one is a more ordinary, regular van, but I just wanted to bring it to
it's
the board's attention.
Cargo van.
It's just a cargo van, but it may require supplemental. It depends on, again, on how the fleet performs over the rest of the year. But this one was not budgeted.
The fleet is going into getting those vehicles to where they're moving shops. They've got everything they need in them. They're not running back and forth to facilities where I've seen them say, I didn't bring that tool. I got to go jump back there. It's like, really? You know what that's costing per hour for you to be sitting in a van?
The only way you stop that is with GPS. The only way you stop that is with GPS, with tracking. I've gone through it. I hired a kid. I said, you go to the job, and you stay there. You need something, you got a cell phone, you call back. I send a kid out there at $10 an hour in a Datsun pickup. Rather than both of you getting in the, both two $23 an hour mechanics, cheap metal mechanics, get in the van and drive all the way back to the shop to pick up a roll of tape that they put on. Speaking of facility, what were your ears burning?
Yeah, you walked right by. We were talking about the efficiencies in having your vans be larger and more accommodating to all of the potential tools and stuff, so they're not running back and forth. to home base to say, man, I didn't bring that wrench, I didn't bring that drill, I didn't bring that, you know, piece of equipment or whatever he needs. So I think that's good. He was suggesting the GPS knowing, but I kind of feel like you're moving to a structure where you've got a lead person who's supervising. No, you should have had that done. Why? What's going on that you're 3 hours on a job that should have taken you 2 hours? Or
yes. In the private sector, the only thing that's the only thing that ever slowed that down was tracking. You know, why are you here, and why did you go? Well, I need to go to Farmer's Building Supply because I forgot a roll of duct tape. You what? You went to Farmer's Building Supply. Two of you went to Farmer's Building Supply.
You were working on a job up by Diamond. Really?
Yep. And yeah. Three. And you paid three times for the duct tape for a tape that really is not ASHMe or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's not approved. You just put tape on there that you got to take back off and put our stuff on there anyway.
Using that as an example is now with the data being so quick, we get notified from our vendors as soon as they check out. Mm-hmm. And so there's more than once when I'm on the phone and going, what's going on? Why are you over there?
Well, it got to be, and I had a conversation, we're a little off track here, but I had a conversation with their vendors. I said, why do you have, every Friday you have a barbecue? For who? For me? No, it's for my employees go there and they have a barbecue, and they spend 45 minutes at the barbecue, when really, it doesn't happen that way. So, it's the employee side of things, and it happens, and what can you do? I don't know.
Yeah, a lot of it has to do with the employees.
Make sure that you are adequately, you have the tools and stuff to do the job. But your deal is kind of like my business. Yeah. What do you? You can't carry it all. Impossible.
No. The majority. So those are the two vehicles that.
Okay. Sounds good.
That were coming forward.
Brian, while you're here, have you checked in with the city about sharing costs of our security?
We reached out to Mike. Burn, I believe, is in charge of their facilities.
Okay.
And we haven't heard anything back yet. We offered it up.
If you have an interaction with Aaron, I just think that it would be advantageous that he not be patrolling just our campus, that he could be doing both. Mm-hmm. We'd share the costs a little bit. If they pay for a third, we pay for two-thirds or whatever. Something like that might make it, you know, comprehensive. We're not just moving our issues over there, and they're not doing the same thing here.
That might be a good subject for our next...
Yeah, quarterly update. Yeah. I won't be here.
The monthly where we have Aaron Mayer and Council.
Oh, that's the one I already missed.
Yeah.
So, that would have been a good topic. I would have, had I been here. Yeah. Let's get my teeth cleaned.
Yeah, were you talking about vehicle replacements? Is that?
Well, we just approved or were updated that yours might require a supplemental. Otherwise, it's in the queue.
That particular van's probably going to actually see a key machine on it because it does a lot of lock work.
Okay.
So.
Good.
That is what I have.
Good. Okay. Thank you very much, Arthur. Anything else for Arthur?
No.
Nothing for me either.
Well, actually, kind of. I'm jumping up to Hugo Hills next week with a potential buyer for that property.
Nice.
And Helene is talking about maybe dusting off the cobwebs a little bit. It's been laying fallow for about a year. And if we're going to charge $6 to $1 million, I don't want to presuppose that we couldn't get top dollar out of it. We want it to shine a little bit.
Sure.
So
we're supposed to get our second bid back today.
Great.
And we've been telling everyone that we were hoping to get them out there next week.
Okay.
The current one.
Good deal.
Okay, moving on to item number 3 is other business. Any other items that need to come from the board?
No. I'd suggest a changing of this agenda in the future, Wendy. Let's put board business up and use other as last. Because it's kind of weird how we go into...
Yeah, that's true. Good idea.
I think I came up... I already did the video stuff that I had made a note of. I hope you endorse those as the two first mm-hmm. videos. They're the ones that stand out to me that are pretty timely. I'm kind of happy with myself from the tying in the purchaser idea to the beneficiaries and making that connection to where... And you got it, Lockstack. And with the price of that car, they're not just buying wood anymore. They're mm-hmm. buying a shelter for these kids, veteran services, mm-hmm. CAC, CASA.
Yeah, I think that's how you sell it. And I hate to say it, but you almost embarrass them into becoming a bidder when they just would pass it by.
Well, they get to tell.
You know what, I see that, you know, maybe, oh God, let me do this. I'll go ahead and buy this thing and I'll work it into my schedule somehow.
Any kind of PR that they do, they need to say, this is what these... Mm-hmm. So...
Yeah, okay. Great idea.
Good.
We really need to get rid of the fact that it's the perception that all that money that came in from timber was just blown. And so that if you get any more money from timber, you're just going to blow it again.
Yeah.
You know, just like with the bill going up north for cannabis taxation. Has a space that it's going to go to. And that was one thing the governor said, well, what would you do? And I said, it wouldn't follow O&C funds that went right into the general fund so that everybody could buy an air-conditioned helicopter for the board to travel around. And it's going to be specified. And that's kind of basically how the levy got passed, is you were very specific as to what you were going to do with it.
Well, we've continued a trajectory that Rosemary, I would assume, kind of initiated was... trying to dedicate some funding as opposed to, you know, segregating out just this anomaly of a general fund where everything was in it, that you've broken off some things to dedicate. That cell tower revenue regenerating into, you know, there may not be the exact nexus for it, but otherwise it's a general fund appropriation, which I have trouble justifying, you know, putting in money into infrastructure to a dedicated capital from a general revenue stream. If you're going to be investing in capital, it should come from some sort of a dedicated revenue stream. Capital, that's where, in like parks, dedicated revenue stream for capital. It's the property sales. So in this one, it seems like it's going to be there forever. You're going to need to keep reinvesting in infrastructure. It'll be a tough justification every day of the week to do that as opposed to paying for a patrol deputy or something like that. So it should have been something I did 8 years ago. I apologize. But how are we? We're going to need to sit people down, parks, fair, and that's going to be a little bit of a hurdle that Commissioner DeYoung is going to have to navigate.
I need a bigger hitch.
No,
I
don't mind as I'm walking out the door being the bad guy. I'm saying, this is what we're going to do, people. And everybody's going to take a little bit of hit, but it's going to be positive for everybody in the long run. If that's the trajectory of the board, and I feel like we had pretty good solidarity on that, makes sense. I've been thinking about it for probably 2 years now, and I think the time to pull that trigger is coming on. If that makes sense to you, Commissioner Young.
Always.
Well, I never want to presuppose that something I...
No, I'm just kicking back, listening to your ideas.
Okay.
Your mind, now that you're a short timer, your mind is just really, really starting to churn. I like that.
It has never stopped. I just don't tell you about every single one of them. Yeah. You want to tell them about my sod idea? Arthur really liked that the other day.
Your what?
We're looking at things of the North Valley. We look at things through such a lens of like it's got to be an expense. Why don't we look at it? It can be a revenue-generating opportunity.
Mm-hmm. An investment.
Exactly. Well, somewhat, but it should return. So there are municipal sewer systems that actually generate revenue as opposed to just costing all the time. And so looking at, because we got terrible news about the perkability
Again, I would really like to sit down with Robert Horbin, because he ran that. He made all kinds of changes to that school system out there. And he says it's not as close to the maximum as you think it is. So I just want to sit down and talk to him. He's a good friend of mine.
Well, it's when they kick it into the, you know, mm-hmm. they dispose of it in a not appropriate way. Mm-hmm. That's where they get ticked. That's where they get dinged. So if they can avoid that.
Now part of the plan for Paradise Ranch has one corner of it that's going to be a sewer system that was going to handle all of that out there in the North Valley, and it wasn't a very big footprint at all. What happened to that plan?
It's still there.
Why aren't we looking at saying, okay, we're going to put that sewer plant in?
Because it's not up to us.
or something like it, not on their property then.
Yeah, it was the element of disposing of the treated affluent over the golf course. So there's a relationship to it all that it's tough to just start one thing if you don't start everything
How
else.
Are they going to do that? Because that, we were told land application was not an option over
it
here.
It is treated to level two. So I've gone...
I know, I've been knee-deep in it. I'm going by over next door when they said...
Oh, you can do it.
And we said...
It's an element of what you're treating.
Let's go back to land application.
What level you're treating it.
You can't go back to land application.
Yeah, you
can't. Nobody can step on it for 60 days.
No. Just
and I was in... off playing golf up north.
And walking it.
At Tokenee, no. And it was with a friend of mine that worked for DEQ forever. And I said, yeah, we're really struggling at the city of Grants Pass because you're not allowed to land apply the affluent. He goes, what are you talking about?
Right.
He said, you've got people. And he gave me a half a dozen people up north. And one of them is J.B. Sod. He said, we'll come and get it.
Yeah. I know.
Well, you got
why,
it.
Why don't we
want
do
it.
That? Why don't we do that?
Why aren't we doing that with our stuff?
On the airport, where you can't build anything else but grow sod.
It'll be the most beautiful landscaped airport you've ever seen.
Dark green grass just surrounding.
I'm fine with both of those resolutions.
Okay.
Did you have anything? I got a job.
Are you done? Okay, the two resolutions you're okay with?
Yeah, great.
Then we will see matters for commissioners. None?
Okay.
With that, we are adjourned at 10:40.
Thank you, sir.